You want to get in on the action? We want to hear from you. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast. Drop us a DM on Twitter at faderoutednz. Comment on our YouTube channel, The Fade Route with DNZ. Questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it, we want to hear from you. Get at us, in crowd. Coming at you from the Hey Yo Studios, it's The Fade Route with DNZ. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Coming at you live from the Ayo Studio.
Ayo.
It's The Fade Route with D and Z. I am D, and we got a great show for you tonight. Yankees get advertising patches. NBA makes rule changes, and baseball starts their second half at the end of the week. But we begin today's show with the MLB All-Star Game. It took place yesterday, and the Home Run Derby took place on Monday. The National League rallied in the eighth inning to beat the American League 3-2. I believe it was their first win in like 11 years, something crazy like that.
Yeah.
In the Home Run Derby, Vlad Jr. beat a Rosarena in the finals. What was your biggest takeaway from the game? And Mr. Met, are you disappointed Pete Alonso did not win three in a row?
My biggest takeaway from the game. I did not give two shits, and I still do not give two shits.
Really?
The Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
Really? You like the All-Star Game?
Do not care. I have no interest whatsoever.
Now, is this something recent, or has this always been the case with you? Like, what's up?
So, with the advent of interleague play, I can watch Pete Alonso face Gerrit Cole anytime, like twice a year.
Yeah.
I can watch Camilo Doval try and shut down, you know, a lineup that includes some of the all-stars that were mentioned. I can see David Bednar trying to come in and try and close the game out for the Pirates against the Guardians. Like, it the bloom is off the rose, man.
Yeah.
If you think back at the height of Major League Baseball, right? Let's talk about the mid-90s. You could have had Greg Maddux starting, right? And your lineup would be Tim Raines, Wade Boggs, Ken Griffey Jr., Juan Gonzalez, Frank Thomas. Greg Maddux was never facing those guys. Like, it was special. It was something that was fun, something that there was bragging rights because they never played each other. On the converse side, you had Roger Clemens, right? Your lineup was Tony Gwynn, Jeff Bagwell, Barry Larkin. Roger Clemens never faced them. Like, it was a treat. It was something different. Now, between free agency, so guys willy-nilly moving about the league, and interleague play, it's killed the buzz for me. Like, that's really killed the buzz for me. I did watch the Home Run Derby, though. Like, okay. I watched a lot of the Home Run Derby. And do I care that Pete Alonso didn't win his third Home Run Derby? No. It's not even... I mean, it's a nice little accolade, it's a nice feather in his cap. Like, that's not going to go, you know, that might go on his bust if he goes into Cooperstown two-time, you know, it might. Mm-hmm. But it's a footnote, you know. It's a nice, notable achievement, but ultimately it's in an exhibition, in a part of the season that ultimately doesn't really matter. And frankly, it's a product of a bygone era, right? The NBA All-Star Game is trash.
Oh, that's trash.
The Pro Bowl is garbage.
It doesn't even exist anymore.
The NHL All-Star Game is like a round-robin 3-on-3 tournament.
We kind of like that one.
It's all right. The MLS, they put together an All-Star team and they play a Premier League team. Like this year, they're playing Arsenal, I believe.
Oh, that should be a blowout.
It should be. You know, Arsenal should kick the crap out of the MLS All-Stars.
Blowed out.
Yeah. Even, bring in the new guys and just let them get their feet wet.
But, yeah, well, they had a decent rating last night. They had 7 million viewers. It's down about 500,000 from last year. Just to give people an idea of the eyeballs on this, about 10 million people watch Wheel of Fortune every night. So it was down from that. It's around what... I think it's a little lower than what the NBA All-Star Game gets, or right around what the NBA All-Star Game gets. And the NBA All-Star Game has some star power in it. You know, I agree with you. I think the NBA All-Star Game is trash. However, they also have a lot of big names and a lot of people that fans like to see.
Right, but if you look at it, Major League Baseball All-Star Game is the closest thing that still resembles a regular season game. And well, the NBA All-Star Game does not do
that. Nah, it's a joke, but that was going to be my next point is, I like watching the All-Star Game, the baseball All-Star Game, because I feel like everybody competes. So, yeah, I get what you're saying, that you could see this guy face this guy. You could see these things, in a weekend now. But it still is a competitive game being played by arguably the best players in the game right now. But my biggest thing...
Well, the best players available, because how many people were out due to injury?
True. Yeah, Dansby was out. Altuve didn't get there because
he Aaron Judge.
There's a lot of people that, and there's some people that chose not to play because they wanted a couple days off. But, I still enjoy the game. It brings back nostalgia of watching, like you said, Greg Maddux have to mow down, Tony Gwynn and shit like that. Not Tony Gwynn. I'm just saying, getting to see, the best pitchers against the best hitters, in the game, if anything. My biggest takeaway, and you might laugh, was that the Braves would have scraped the American League. Yep, I'm going to say it. If it was the Braves against the American League, the Braves would have won. And the score wouldn't have been as high as you thought it was going to be. And here's my argument. Because at the end of the day, the American League team would have been just a bunch of stars playing together, where on the other side, you would have had a team that's been playing together all year. And I think that would have been the real difference in the game. I'm kind of happy Pete, didn't win three in a row. Because I like Ken Griffey Jr. having that.
Well, he wouldn't have won three in a row anyway. He didn't lose. He didn't win last year. Julio Rodriguez knocked him out, and he knocked him out again. It was over before he even started, man. 41 home runs. Pete just gracefully bowed out.
Yeah, but it was a good game. I enjoyed watching Ohtani. He struck out. I enjoyed watching Austin Riley make some phenomenal plays at third base. It's fun. It's fun to watch players try to steal. Seeing people try to steal in the All-Star games, like people trying to steal in the World Series, I feel like, even though the success rate of a stolen base is like 78% these days. Crazy. At the end of the day, the baseball All-Star game is still my favorite All-Star game to watch. I enjoy the competition. I enjoy them interviewing the players. I enjoy the banter. I enjoy it.
That's fair. I mean, it's more of an exhibition. It's more entertainment. It's not a real
game.
It's
not as cheesy though as the NBA All-Star Game, where people are just giving each other layups and dunks, and no one's playing defense. I mean, those pitchers out there are trying to get the batter out. And, the batters that are coming in, they're trying to hit the ball. They're trying to get on base. They're no slouching in this game. The other part is they don't play the whole game. So when they do play, they want to do well. If I'm only getting one at bat, man, I'm going to make this count. If I'm only pitching one inning or two batters, I'm on a national stage right now. I'm going to make it count.
No, that's absolutely true. And there's really no additional frills and competitions outside of the home run derby. There's no skills competition. in the Pro Bowl games, you have all of these different events now.
Yeah.
In the NBA weekend, you have the Rising Stars game. Major League Baseball has that too, but they pre-tape it. Major League Baseball only does the Home Run Derby, right? They have the NBA has multiple events within the skills competition. The NHL has the best skills competition,
yes,
in my opinion.
That's right.
If Major League Baseball somehow incorporated more skills, I believe it's the KBO, they do the bunt derby. You have to bunt into a bullseye. It's almost like darts, but with bunting. That would be a cool event. You probably can't get maybe NFL Quarterback Club used to do the farthest throw. You have an outfielder try and throw from the warning track to home. Whoever gets the closest. These are events that, might bring some interest because it's man against man. And, even a match race. Think about the fastest guys in the majors. Wouldn't they want to know who the fastest guy is?
Going from home to first and from first to home and things like that?
Yeah. A 4x1 relay. You gotta go, you start from home to first, next person, boom, from first to second, third, from second to third. Do something like that. Make it interesting. Give it something different. Because what do we see? We get the Rising Stars game pre-taped on Saturday. We get the Celebrity Softball game, which, okay, who cares?
Yeah.
Great. Felix Hernandez hit a home run. Whoopee. And that's pre-taped too. And then the Home Run Derby, and then that's it. So, they're going to have to clean it up a little bit to get my attention back. But we are officially at the halfway point, right? Officially, we're a little bit over the halfway point of the total number of games played. But this, the All-Star break, marks the unofficial midway point of the season. The trade deadline, it's August 1st, man. It's not that far away. So what storylines are you going to be following in the second half of the year?
So there's a couple. So the number one storyline I'm going to be watching for is who in the American League, which team is going to rise to compete with the Braves for the World Series? Because right now, I don't know there's a team out there that's going to be able to do it. Houston's not going to be able to do it. The Angels aren't going to make the playoffs. The Yankees aren't going to. I don't know what the Yankees are going to. The Yankees aren't going to make the playoffs. Rays, yeah, right. Boston, no. Cleveland, no. Chicago, no. So I want to see which team is going to make an acquisition at the deadline. Which team is going to make a run? And which team is going to compete? Because right now, there's not a team that can touch the Braves. The second storyline I'm going to be following is who in the National League could trip the Braves up? What team is going to turn it around? And I got to be they could be a problem in a three-game series. They could be a problem in a five-game series. I don't know if I really want to play this team, last year, it was the Phillies, man. The Phillies got hot at the right time, and they were a problem. Is it going to be the Reds? I think the Braves can outscore the Reds. That's why I'm not really too worried about the Reds. Are the Padres going to make the playoffs? They're four games under 500. Are they going to turn around? Because we got to play San Francisco. Braves have to play San Francisco. Please. Either the Dodgers, they got nothing. The Dodgers got no pitching. It's not happening. So I want to see what team in the National League, kind of rises up or gets hot or makes me wonder, I don't want to play them or they could be a problem. Because right now I don't see that. And then the last storyline I'm going to be following is, will Aaron Judge come back this year? This dude's on my fantasy team. And nobody wants him. So everyone's kind of figuring that he's not going to be coming back, or he's going to come back and he's going to be a shadow of himself. I don't know. But I don't think the Yankees are going to be able to make it with him or without him, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that rides out.
The Braves are 16-29 right now. I can all but guarantee you they will not represent the National League.
Whoa! You heard it, guys. July 12th, Z puts his hex on the Braves. Why are you doing my team dirty, Z?
Well, turnabout is fair play in the way you speak of. But it's not just that. They're off to such a hot start. And what is the playoffs about? It's about the hot team at the moment. So later in the year, like, that is when you really want to take off. Look at the Phillies. Look at the Nationals. You're able to kind of peak at the right time. Now, the team could make a couple of acquisitions and start that process. Milwaukee's still got some studs. Now, if they add some more pitching to go with Burns and Woodruff, say JV from the Mets, sitting in as your number three, that's something interesting. Now, also the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks, if they add a pitcher or two, they can be dangerous. They're in a statistical tie with the Dodgers.
Wild.
So, yeah, it's been a very surprising year. I don't expect the Reds to be there at the end. The Reds are too young. They're a year ahead of time. The Diamondbacks, they can slip a little bit, but I think they'll be enough to be in the wild card. The cream will rise to the top except for the Cardinals. I'm looking at the Cardinals because who's available on the Cardinals? Arenado, Goldschmidt, maybe Montgomery, maybe Waino. So that could be an interesting little breakup there. I'm looking at the Padres. Who are they possibly going to get rid of? Soto's a free agent. Are we going to see Soto move again? Are we going to see, you know, maybe Musgrove, maybe Yu Darvish. Maybe if they feel like they're out and they're just treading water, perhaps they, you know, get out from under these more expensive pieces. Do the Rockies trade Chris Bryant? Like, that would be something I'm looking at. Do the Mets deal Verlander? Do they deal Scherzer? Do they take 50 cents on the dollar and just eat some salary? Or do they take on salary and if they find that they're going to add in the next 2 weeks? Like, there's they're an intriguing
talk,
team.
There's been some talk of Bellinger possibly going to the Yankees.
Cody Bellinger to the Yankees is another team that I'm looking at, another play that I'm looking at, because it makes too much sense. He can spell Rizzo at first. He can play center field. He's left-handed. You know, he's
how do the Yankees not have any lefties in their lineup?
Only Rizzo, right?
It's so weird.
It's so wild. But this is a fault of Brian Cashman. He chose Giancarlo Stanton over Juan Soto. He chose Giancarlo Stanton over Bryce Harper. These are moves that are starting to bite teams in the ass, right? This is the team that's starting to bite them in the ass. Are the Marlins going to stay around? Do the Marlins add? Like, it's a very good young core team. Skip Schumacher's got them playing well. Gold Cup, baby. Panama just took the lead on USA. Oy vey. No bueno. But I'm looking at, do the Rangers hold on? Because the Astros are right there. These are plenty of interesting stories. I don't care about the Central. Like, the Central's a walkover, man. Like, I'm sorry. I'm looking at it. The Guardians, the Twins, they don't scare me. The Tigers and Matt Manning, who just, you know, they threw a combined no-hitter against the Mets, don't care. There are going to be three teams from the American League East in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that. But it's the main storyline that interests me, or where are these chess pieces going to go? I mean, we're going to talk about Otani later, so I'm not even going to discuss him right now. But he's like, right? He is the overarching story. Like, this has been the entire season. Where is he going to go? Is he going to go? What's it going to take to get him? But meanwhile, you have more reasonable targets like a Bellinger. Hell, even Juan Soto is more realistic than Otani. It might take less to get Soto out of San Diego. So I'm looking to see, you know, and shakes out because there is no waiver deadline, right? That is long gone. We're not doing that anymore. There could be some huge names moving.
For all the grill masters, green thumbers, home repair heroes, and DIY aficionados in the Richmond, Virginia area, if you're looking for a personal service quality products and a convenient shopping experience, look no further than Thacker Ace Hardware in Colonial Heights, Virginia. Owner Don Rackley and his team of local experts have everything you need to tackle all of your home projects. I'm talking paints by Benjamin Moore and Clark in Kensington, power tools by Craftsman and Milwaukee, electrical, plumbing, hardware, and let's not miss the grills. Weber, Big Green Egg, Traeger, Blackstone, top shelf amazing. And for all you green thumbers, their nursery department is fantastic. Give them a call today, 804-766-4223, or stop by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. That's 804-766-4223, or swing by 27 Dunlop Village in Colonial Heights. Thacker Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
We're talking about shaking and shaping the landscape of sports. A recent story came out that's shaping the landscape of how media covers sports. The New York Times has eliminated their sports department. I say that again. A national newspaper has eliminated its sports department. So probably the biggest newspaper in the world acquired The Athletic about a year ago and decided that we're gonna outsource it to The Athletic. So it's redundant. We're not gonna have our own sports section. We're just gonna outsource it. So we're media, this affects us. What are your thoughts on the changes made by the New York Times and the L Times, because they're in the process of doing this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised, I'm shocked. It's a bold move. The crazy part is I don't think the younger reader will care, because that's not where they get their stories or their information. You know, times are changing, and the New York Times might be ahead of the curve here. It's a shame, because, you know, we're so used to getting to know players and getting to know coaches and getting inside stories about Roger Goodell and Rob Manfred and what really happened here and what really happened there, and that's what we're really going to lose. And there are some really good writers that work for those papers, and we're not going to be able to enjoy their craft on that platform. But at the same time, I think it opens things up for shows like us and people who do podcasts and people who do blogs, because now that becomes a place where you can get information, which can be a little scary too, because, you know, you trust the New York Times to do honest research and deliver honest work. We slip up from time to time. Our jobs aren't on the line on here. So, you know, someone can listen to what we say, and, you know, we do our best to do our research. You know, we have a stats department, but hey, you know, it's the best we could do. But I think that's the stuff that's going to really be missed, is the stories and getting to know players and getting to know personnel and really getting, not I don't want to say dirt, but getting the truth. You know, things happened at Northwestern over the weekend where their head coach got fired. And that was all because, you know, someone went to the school paper and kind of got it out there. And, you know, that's a small paper, as opposed to going to the New York Times, going to the Daily News, going to the New York Post.
And, you know, you have to figure that a guy like Tyler Kepner, who's been at the New York Times forever and has been a key cog and anchor in that sports program, he's now doing the national news. Like, that's, you know, that's quite shocking, quite the adjustment for somebody who is very well known. Tyler Kepner is a well known and well respected writer. But, I mean, you're looking at the Atlantic. They definitely have, you know, a fair share of quality writers. You know, Frank Sola, you have Ken Rosenthal. They definitely have quality behind us. But it's a cost saver, right?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
At the end of the day, like, they have the Athletic. It's redundant to keep a sports department and Athletic when you can just both. And newspapers are a dying art anyway, right? Newspapers have been dying media forever.
That's what they say. They say print is dying, but
they get thinner and thinner, and they get, you know, more and more content is transferred over to the digital side, and that plays into the hands of, you know, the Athletics of the world, the podcasts, the other media outlets that deal only in the digital space. So, you know, I understand it from a business standpoint. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily, because you have a lot of people who are now either scrambling to find work, or you're putting people in positions where they won't necessarily succeed. But maybe that's part of the plan. You know, maybe it's just, we'll give you this and you'll want to leave on your own accord kind of thing. But it's a dark day.
Never thought I'd see the day. Never thought I would see something like this. Because, you got to think that other papers look to the New York Times and try to mimic the things that they do. It's hard to believe there aren't papers out there that are looking at this and saying, we can do the same thing, you know, or, you know, we can get by in other ways. We can save costs in other ways, or, you know, we can subsidize this. We could outsource it. You got to imagine that this is on the minds of smaller papers.
Yeah, I mean, think about it from our standpoint, right? We operate on a weekly basis, right? Where we do the hottest stories of the week during a given time. But that allows, like you said, it allows for us to have a little extra space. They have to get it right, and they have to get it fast. They have to get it first in some instances. So, like, on that big stage, there's less room. A smaller newspaper that can just rely on Associated Press reports, they're not going to have the issue that the New York Times are having. But and also, like, the idea of the sports column is changing too, because, you know, why, if I have an opinion piece that I'm going to put out that's sourced and that is of a certain length, I can just post it on my own website. I can post it on a blog. I can sell it.
Right.
I can, there are so many different spheres that we can operate nowadays, and there's so many multimedia streams that, you know, I can just put a video up on YouTube. I can put it up on Instagram. It's easy to get eyes on you now, as compared to even just 5 years ago. It's easy now to get your message out there, to get your brand out there. And this is the wave of the future. I have a bad feeling for news media that this is going to be the first domino that falls, but it's more of like a restructuring and reorganization. Like, it's going to be more about digital. It's going to be more about multimedia. So a lot more videos.
Right, and you also see all the, and there's all the, yeah, and there's all these shows on YouTube, and there's all these shows on Instagram. That
look at ESPN, they're feeling it too, man. Like, they just laid off 30 something people. Like, they're feeling it as well, because again, there's redundancy, and there's extra calls. And the bottom line is the bottom line. It's a business.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. We really care about what's under your hood.
Speaking of business, the NBA is in the business of changing its rules. There will be two new rule changes in particular next season. Coaches will be given an extra challenge if their first challenge is successful, and refs will be penalizing flopping. Which new rule are you more excited for, Dave?
Neither. Like, replay doesn't work. It doesn't work in any sport. There's no sport where replay works. Let the refs do the best they can and have the eagle eye in the sky eliminate the egregious errors and you know, live with the human error, live with human determination. I mean, here's the deal. It's just like there's bumping and there's holding and there's grinding on every single play in the NBA. You call a foul every time someone goes to the basket. What's going to make you call a foul this time and not that time? How are your 60-year-old eyes going to be able to see if he really hit his elbow on this toss? Or if it really mattered that, you know, he pulled the chair out from under him when he was trying to box out? You know, these are little things. Of anything, if you want to hold it until the last 2 minutes of the game where it might count a little bit more, okay. But, I mean, the foul disparage, you know, the differences in fouls in some of these playoff games last year were crazy. I mean, it's how is LeBron James only going to go to the foul line like three times? Like, come on. Like that, these things doesn't happen. And then as far as flopping, again, this is something that you leave the eagle in the sky to determine. I think it's hard to judge how much damage a Jokic forearm does to 260-pound LeBron James. Like, is he overthrowing going onto the floor? Possibly, but I've also never been pushed by a man that tall and that big before. I don't really know. Let the players play in concrete. A lot less of them will hit the ground. I can assure you that would eliminate flopping. Or how about this? Embarrass them. When they play their flops, play them over and over again in the arena or around social media to show, you know, what a joke it is. I mean, we see it with soccer players, how they have, you know, they go crazy every time they're kicked or every time they fall. You got hockey players dislocating shoulders and going out there and still playing. It comes down to you need to find a way to make your players respect the game a little bit. And honestly, one of the other things I'm a little tired of, especially in the NBA, is arguing with the referee. Like, even when you make a foul, they still argue with the referee. I get it. You want to be competitive and you want to win and your job is on the line and you're not having a good night and all that. Yeah, I get all that. But you can't tell me that LeBron James, as big as a star as he is, him complaining to referee over and over and over again doesn't do psychological on that referee, so that when he does make a mistake, he gives LeBron a make good. Or he's more inclined to give LeBron the call because it's LeBron James. It's common psyche here. I mean, it's just the way our bodies are conditioned to react to certain things. And the NBA had that whole cheating scandal back in the 2000s. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you need to get your players to respect the game more. It's not about really changing the rules here.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned soccer, and you do get this in hockey as well, the idea of embellishment. Right, it's one thing, like if you get fouled, you get fouled, soccer, right? You have a late challenge, if somebody goes in, studs up, automatic red card, you have these things. But any kind of bump or, you know, even just like a little box out flopping to the ground like crazy. In hockey, right, we've seen it. Guys step on each other's stick blades and just go flailing. So one of the things that needs to happen in all three of these sports, I mean, in soccer, they play advantage. So they just keep going. Just keep going. Plain and simple. Oh, you're going to flop on the ground? That's nice. Your team is now at a numerical disadvantage.
Yeah.
Too bad. So sad. Get up.
Yeah. I mean, they don't get it. They don't get the disservice they're doing to the game by acting in the manner they did. I mean, and it's this new era, right? I mean, I don't remember Larry Bird ever faking being hit in the face.
Larry Bird's usually doing the hitting.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's because they made it so soft. Maybe you should go back to it being a little hard. And when you get slapped in the eye, you don't have to fake getting slapped in the eye. No. Yeah, I mean, Adam Silver has got his hands full. He's trying to put in this in-season tournament, which for the life of me, I don't understand at all. They're going to count as regular season games. They're just going to think it's going to be played in December. It's going to be seeding. There's money on the line. I think the finals are going to be played in Vegas. I mean, if you're a good team, I mean, I don't see why you'd want to play in that in-season tournament. The problem is they're trying to mimic what the NCAA does. But in the NCAA, you get teams that would never normally play each other. So you get a Kansas against a USC, or you get like a Duke versus a Butler, like, you know, and these are games we wouldn't normally get. When you do this in-season tournament, you're going to get teams that in about 2 months they're going to wind up doing a home and away series. So I guess the NBA shouldn't be trying to take things from college. Let's right. Put it that way, right? Like, you're supposed to set the standard. College should be trying to figure out, well, how does the NBA do so well? You're not supposed to go and look at the college format and be like, man, I really like what they got going on here. We got to try to take something from the minor leagues. Yeah, take something from the small team. Like, what?
I mean, if you're going to do something like that, then okay, take the divisions and have them play a tournament. For, you know, number one, first place team, you get a bye. Other four teams, it's a tournament. The winner of that tournament gets the division leader. Playoff spots on the line. Do something crazy.
So like an automatic bid or something?
An automatic bid into the playoffs. Yeah. Like, if you're really going to do this, then if you're really going to rip off college, then rip off college. But, you know, as far as the rules that we know about, the flop, it's going to be a tech. I don't know if that's going to necessarily dissuade.
So from what I understand, it's a technical free throw, but you do not get the ball after you shoot the free throw, from what I gather. Like, you shoot your shot, but then it goes back to whoever had possession.
Yeah, I don't know. It's too convoluted for my liking. You know, just it's absolutely pointless. Just call a tech and just do it like you normally would. It doesn't need to have, you know, it doesn't need to have this additional layer to it.
And it can be challenged.
Yeah.
It can be challenged.
This is gonna go the way of the pass interference rule in the NFL. Like, it's gonna be on a pilot program basis, and then it's going to be gone after a year. You know, that does nothing for me. The coaches' challenges, the NBA is slow enough as it is in the last 2 minutes.
Oh, it's awful.
I definitely get a nice tour of the coaches' table, the scorers' table, I should say, like, at that point in the game. The only thing this year is we're not going to have Jeff Van Gundy talking about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've gone so far with technology in the game that, you know, the cat is out of the bag. So we can't really say, like, oh, just take it away, because it's not it's not going to happen. Like, unfortunately, like, they're not playing to us. Like, we're the old men yelling at clouds at this point in our lives. And that's fine. Like, I will yell at that cloud because it's stupid. But, you know, it's not what we grew up with. It's not what we enjoy. And we're not the only ones. Like, if we want to watch highlight reels, I'll watch YouTube. I'll watch YouTube of Michael Jordan. I will not watch today's product for highlight reel. Just if we're gonna talk about real games, if we're gonna talk about real competition, like, it's slowly but surely eroding. And a lot of it is due to, like, the softer nature of the sport.
There's no pride. The players don't have pride in their teams. Like,
it's about
the
individual contract.
Right. And they don't have respect for the game. You know, Larry Bird wasn't going to try to hook up with Michael Jordan and win championships. No, I want to beat Michael Jordan. Magic Johnson was not going to go and try to join Isaiah and the Pistons. No, I want to beat the Pistons' brains in with my team where I am. And that's the whole mentality that changed. I mean, you get players that bounce from team to team. You know, how could he possibly really care about the longevity of this particular team?
And also the advent of free agency. Agency is a major thing. Like, player movement, when you had a situation where, like, a Bill Walton met up with a Kareem, they were traded. It was a trade. Kareem, perfect example. He was in Milwaukee from the Lakers. He got traded. Like, these things happen.
Yeah, perfect examples. Look what's happening with Damian Lillard. I want to be a Blazer for life. I want to play here. I want to win here. I want to surround me. And then, trade me. What? You think Kyrie Irving gives a shit about the Dallas Mavericks? It's just a uniform. It's just a game he's playing. He doesn't care about anything like that.
Guys like Kevin Durant don't give a shit what you think about them, because at the end of the day, you are coming to watch them.
Yep, and he's chasing experiences. That's what he's chasing. He's not chasing championships. He's chasing experiences. He wanted to go to the Suns 2 years before he got to the Suns.
Right. So I'm sure Brooklyn felt great about that when they were bringing him in and building around him with Kyrie and James Harden and they went all in. And that's what teams are doing now. They're buying into the mercenary nature of sport. And, you know, the idea of drafting and developing a team feels passé now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild. Where rather than, you know, draft and develop and grow a young core, we're just going to go for the quick fix. And it's amazing how it changed. And it wasn't even that long ago that, you know, trust the process, right? That was that built the Sixers. And I mean, I guess that's the shining example of when it doesn't work. But, you know, a team that's trying to use the process is the San Antonio Spurs, right? They drafted Victor Wembanyama, number one overall, and apparently they've seen all they've needed to see from him in summer league. Pop and company. Pop, who just signed a brand new 5-year contract, so he answered our question about how long is he going to coach. At least 5 more years. So Pop and company have decided to shut down Victor Wembanyama after only 2 summer league games. Now, we know that summer league doesn't mean much to begin with, but what are your takeaways from Wemby's summer league performance?
Wow. I was blown away. I'm blown away by his size. I'm blown away by his length. If he's able to stay healthy, I think he's going to change the game of basketball. I mean, I watched him get a rebound off the rim without even jumping, and then he dunked it into the basket. He put it right back in. He swats jump shots and then runs the floor. You can't block his jump shot. He can shoot from wherever he wants to on the floor. You cannot block his jump shot. So if he decides he's not going to go to the basket, he's going to shoot a three, he's going to shoot from the foul line, the baseline, just go get the rebound or box him out because you can't block his shot. I'm looking, I have to say, yeah, for the first time since LeBron, I'm actually looking forward to him playing a real game. Like, Zion was cool, but I wasn't that anticipating what he was going to look like against professionals. I really want to see this kid play in a serious game and just see all the possibilities with him, you know? The Spurs are famous for not throwing alley-oops. They're going to be throwing a lot of alley-oops to this guy. There's no reason not to.
No, he has the ball handling skill. He has the touch. He has the finesse. I want to see the body. I want to see how he takes to this kind of adversity. I want to see how he goes up against a Jokic. I want to see him go up against a top defender. I want to see him go up against a guy like Draymond.
Draymond's going to get ejected. Both of them probably going to get ejected because Draymond's going to get frustrated, especially if he posterizes him.
Well, it's going to go both ways because, you know what? Draymond is going to get underneath Wemby and he'll fight for positioning. And that's going to lead to more than one step. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting battle throughout the year. And there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of positives to take out of this, right? He rebounded from that first game and he delivered, right? He went from 9-8-5. In that second game, he delivered a double-double. He was a 27-12-3 blocks. So that's what you want to see. You want to see that he's able to shake off bad performances. Now, can he do that on the second day of a back-to-back against Giannis and the Bucks or against LeBron and AD? Can he do that against Kevin Durant? Like, can he hold down the rim against a guy like Kevin Durant? Like, that's something that I would like to see. Like, those questions have yet to be answered. But if you're the Spurs, you definitely are pleased and he's healthy, right? That's the most important thing. The 18 points a game, the 10 rebounds, the 2 assists, the 4 blocks, that's all nice. But the gravy, that's gravy. That's all great. The most important thing is that he is out of summer league healthy and ready to go. But this is the first step. There are plenty more hurdles that Victor Wembanyama needs to climb. And the only reason why he still has to climb them is because the stars don't play in the summer league. Like, this is for, you know, these are for the undrafted guys. These are for the end of the bench guys. This is for the guys who are...
Chet Holmgren's playing.
Chet Holmgren has to play. He broke his leg last year. The dude has to play. So
get out there.
He has no choice. So he's got to be in shape. Now, and Chet Holmgren's not a star. Like, Chet Holmgren ain't done shit in this league.
The Thunder might be good this year, man.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if they were. I mean, they're certainly young enough. They're certainly talented enough. But
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, man.
Yeah, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's a stud. But, you know, his name Josh Giddey, another good player. But you have to get out of summer league healthy, and Chet Holmgren is a prime example. He didn't make it out of summer league healthy, and now he's a year behind the process. So the Spurs did the right thing. Like, they saw what they needed to see. They saw that, you know, he could do the job, and he's now ready for camp. They're ready for camp with him. And the next challenge awaits Wembanyama when the lights are on bright. Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their hoodies, snapbacks, graphic tees, accessories, and more. Season 3 merch is up now. Get it while you can. Go to fckclout.com and get all of your needs for men and women. That's fckclout.com.
More or less?
All right, boys and girls, we have statements. And it's either more or less likely. More or less. Number one, the New York Yankees have an outstanding second half and make the playoffs.
Less likely. I just don't see where it's going to happen. I don't see where the offense is going to come on. You know, everyone likes to say, well, this is why Judge was the MVP last year. Look how bad this team is without him. I'm not going to go that far. Even if he came back at 100%, they're still not better than the Rays, Orioles, or Toronto. So I'm saying less likely.
I am going to say that it's within the realm of possibility, and not necessarily because of a healthy Aaron Judge, although a healthy Aaron Judge would be great, but you're dealing with a torn tendon and a big toe. Chances are that's not happening. And if he does come back, he's going to have to DH. But you're not playing him in the outfield on a torn toe tendon.
Oh, good point. Throw Stanton out there. He's great.
Yeah, I mean, Stanton was a representative player when he was with the Marlins. This is what you're seeing is atrophy. That's what you're seeing because the Yankees refused to let him play the outfield. When he played, he was pretty decent. But, you know, I'm looking at a guy like Cody Bellinger, you know, pie in the sky, Juan Soto. Like, the Yankees, you know, make the move. The Yankees need left-handed pop, like yesterday. Go get Max Kepler from the Twins. Like, do something to get some semblance of left-handed pop into this order because you have none. I'm not mentioning Otani. That's too pie in the sky. That's too rich for Brian Cashman's blood. Actually, probably a lot of these guys are too rich for Brian Cashman's blood at this point in time. But, like, that injection, you know, that would be something that would provide a little bit of spark. And that's exactly what the Yankees need. Hell, like, look at the Cardinals. See what the Cardinals have to offer. Like, maybe you can get something. The Pirates, they're out of it. See if there's somebody that you can poach off of their team. Catch a little lightning in a bottle. It's within the realm of possibility. They're not that far out that it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to miss the playoffs. Like, even the Red Sox aren't that far out that it's over, right? They're 48-43. Everybody in the American League East is over 500. So I'm going to say more likely that they stay in this thing and that they have an outstanding second half because they're going to get reinforcements. They have no choice. They have to get reinforcements, preferably left-handed ones, preferably ones that hit home runs in that short porch in the Bronx. More or less, number two, Shohei Ohtani gets traded at the trade deadline.
I keep going back and forth on this. I'm going to say it behooves the Angels to trade him because he's not going to be returning. If he hits the open market, he's not going to be returning if he hits the open market. So get something for him now. But from what I'm hearing Moreno is pretty stubborn on this because he doesn't want to go down as the guy who traded Babe Ruth. So I'm going to say less likely.
You have to figure it's less likely just from the simple fact of the matter, right? This guy's going to want a $500 million contract. Now, I don't know who can afford that, but most teams can't. And then it becomes a question of, because you're concerned that he's not going to sign this contract extension, what are you really willing to give up? I'm not giving up my top five prospects and a major MLB ready guy for 2 months of Shohei Ohtani.
Right. So somebody says there was the Marlins former president, forget his name, but he had a podcast, and what he was saying is that it would take two prospects, two players. That's the gist of what it would take to get Ohtani as a rental.
I think it was David Sampson.
Yeah, that's him. And it wouldn't have to necessarily be your best prospects, but it has to be, you know, it has to be decent prospects. You're talking about an A player, a B player, and then two players. And he said you would treat it as if you were trading a pitcher and a hitter. Instead of looking at Ohtani as one player, you were looking at Ohtani as two players. So I'm giving you a pitcher with a sub-3 ERA, a sub-4 ERA, and I'm giving you a hitter who is a power hitter, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it gets done.
A guy like – a package like Dominguez, Wells, Vasquez, and Volpe.
That's a lot.
Right? But you're talking – that's the kind of – that. But that's
– I don't think it has to be – I don't think it has to. I think it's either Dominguez or Volpe. It doesn't have to be both of those guys.
Dominguez and Peraza, then.
Yes. Dominguez, Peraza, and then two players. So it's like LeMahieu and one other guy.
Now, well, that becomes a thing. Like, do you mutually?
So maybe Herman. Herman.
Yeah.
Because the idea is I'm giving you Ohtani,
like, right? But you're also gonna end up having to probably take Anthony Rendon too, just from like it's the poison pill. Like, okay, like you want my best player, you want Josh Beckett, you got to take Mike Lowell. And as it turned out, Mike Lowell was the better Red Sox than Josh Beckett. But that's the story for another day. Mike Lowell was awesome, but like that's the poison pill in this thing. Like you're gonna probably have to take Rendon if you're going to get Ohtani. Now, fortunately for the Yankees, they have a fellow named Josh Donaldson that they can DFA, and they can use Rendon at third. But what's it going to cost you? Now, you look at the top five at the beginning of the year, the top five farm systems. Number one was the Orioles.
Yeah,
they could definitely use Ohtani, and he would play in Camden Yards. Is he gonna sign in Baltimore? No. Number two is the Dodgers. He already likes the LA market, would probably re-sign, and I think they have enough to get him. Number three, you're looking at the Diamondbacks. Resurgent, right? Could they possibly swing that? Would he re-sign? Most likely no. Number four, the Cleveland Guardians. They're first place, but they're first place 500. I don't necessarily think they need Ohtani to win the division. They need Ohtani to go far in the playoffs. And then the resurgent Reds are number five. He's not re-signing with Cincinnati. So realistically, it's got to be less likely just from how rich the package needs to be and the likelihood that he's going to re-sign with any of those teams I just mentioned that can actually afford him. It's 1 out of 5. It's 20%. Like that just doesn't fly. That's not realistic. Unless the Yankees catch fire and then offer the sun, moon, and stars. Or if the Mets get hot and offer the sun, moon, and stars. But I realistically see the Mets as sellers. Right? It would behoove them to get out from under some of these guys. Bring in Ohtani next year in free agency, if that's what you're so inclined to do. And keep your farm system, use them to get somebody else, or fortify your major league roster with them. But...
Well, here's another thought is you go to Ohtani and you say, hey, listen, we want a chance to re-sign you. Where do you want to play for the rest of the season? We will trade you wherever you want to go, but let us have a chance to re-sign you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us, you know, and it almost come to him like, you're being nice. You're the good guys. Like, hey, listen, we suck this year. We want you to compete for a title. I will trade you wherever you want to go. I will make it work. I'll take, you know, pennies on the dollar to get you where you want. But you've got to give me a chance to re-sign you in the offseason.
Okay, cool. Trade me to the Astros.
Sure. 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 I love the Astros. I love those players. I'll take them.
Oh, my God. I don't know if they would trade in the division. I don't know. If he's that, if Artie Moreno is that concerned about trading Babe Ruth, he certainly isn't going to trade Babe Ruth.
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to say, I'm saying that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Well, like, listen, I just want a chance. I want a chance because the whole problem is like, if I don't trade you, I get nothing. Here I am. I'm going to go trade you where you want to go. I'm going to get that team's good prospects and good players. And then I want to bring you back here to play with those guys. Like a Chapman situation, you know? So where do you want to go? And I'll make it work. I'll figure it out. I'll take pennies on the dollar if I have to, as long as you give me a chance. Because they're not going to have a chance if he hits the open market.
No, not a chance.
He's not going to talk to them because there's no reason to. I don't have to talk to you.
Now, you know a team that, you know, could possibly pull the trigger. They're notoriously frugal. But the Tampa Bay Rays. could you imagine a 1-2 of Ohtani and Glasnow? That would actually be really good. And McClanahan coming back? Like, that would be pretty damn good. And, you know, you have Bradley, who's already on the Major League roster. Maybe Meade, Carson Williams. You have a few guys that you have spare parts that you can, you know, that you can ship to the Angels. And let's be real here. They're going to find a guy in A-ball on some other team, on some other team's roster. He's going to be, you know, the Cy Young Award winner in 3 years.
Make trades with the Rays, man. Don't make trades with the Rays.
But they could certainly use him. But I would not be surprised if the Rays get into this thing.
Brian Cashman would shit himself.
Brian Cashman shitting himself for a bunch of different reasons. But if the Orioles or the Rays pony up and get Shohei Ohtani, that division is done. That division is over. OVA. Over.
We're officially sellers. Okay. Let's clean house.
Let's start printing. We're going to start printing tickets for the American League Championship Series right now.
No, I'm saying if you're the Yankees, be like, all right, and that does it.
Yep.
That just about does it. We're in sell mode, boys.
And we're going to start with Mr. Cashman.
We're going to start with my office.
Whether some of you guys are furniture movers, that's great. So, yeah, no, if that ever happens, it's a time for a change in the Bronx, but it's been time for a change in the Bronx, but these are all lovely theories, but it's not likely at all. It's going to be very, 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 very costly. And who knows? I don't see it. More or less, number three, Dame Lillard does not play another game for the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, so this is looking more and more likely because I think he's going to sit out to prevent injury. Blazers GM Joe Cronin said it may take time to find the right trade for the Blazers. I applaud him. Good for him. Make sure this thing makes sense for you and make sure you max out, man. So I'm going to say more likely.
I'm going more likely for a different reason. Right, the Miami Heat laughed at your ask for Damian Lillard, but as the regular season goes on and these guys' values drop, it's all of a sudden it's not looking as silly of a request. So Dame Lillard, his value is going to stay the same because he's most likely not going to play, right? He's fresh, he's healthy, he's ready to go. Like your assets are the ones that could depreciate as the team that's going to try to acquire Lillard. You're incurring all the risk here. Right? All the risk is going your way for injury or lack of performance. the Portland Trailblazers don't need to do jack. Dame Lillard can just chill. He can just kick back, relax, stay in shape. So when he gets the call, he's good to go. Is that likely? The public persona makes you think no, just because of his affinity for the Portland market, his affinity and loyalty towards the team. And he's going to act in good faith, but that doesn't mean the team won't deactivate him, right? That doesn't mean that the team won't protect its asset. It's a murky situation because there's a lot of moving parts, but it's more likely that he's going to play. So I'm going to go less likely that he doesn't play another game. I think he's going to play at least a little bit just to show that he's healthy and he's ready to go. But it's the long play is for Lillard to not play. The long play is for him to stay healthy, and the long play is for him to be that coveted asset. But stranger things have happened. Who's to say that the Blazers don't get off to a hot start? Stranger things have happened. I mean, for God's sake, the Sacramento Kings were fourth in the Western Conference last year. Stranger things have happened, for sure. So, if the Blazers get hot, who's to say this all doesn't fall by the wayside?
Are you in need of air care maintenance or service? I have the company for you. Air Care Technicians. They service the Westchester and Northern Bronx area and can help you with all your heating and cooling maintenance and service needs. Just give them a call at 914-315-1547. Again, that's 914-315-1547. Or shoot them an email at aircaretechnicians@gmail.com. These guys are the real deal, as they are veteran-owned, licensed, and insured. Make sure to tell them that D&Z sent you.
The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
Boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. We put up a poll on our Twitter account at FadeRouteDNZ, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said vote gets a coveted ass trophy and a shout out on this here show. And do you know who took home the coveted ass trophy last week, D?
I don't.
The worldwide leader, ESPN. You laid off a bunch of people and had a pizza party. Great looks, guys. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Alleged Superstar of the Week, D?
All right, first up, I've got the New York Yankees. The famously Spartan uniforms will now sport an advertising patch on their home and road jerseys. From now until the 2031 season, the purity and timelessness of the Yankees uniform is gone. You might as well slap a last name on the back and let the players start wearing facial hair. New York Yankees, you are my alleged superstar of the week. My next one is Mike Friedland. Pete Alonso's original home run derby pitcher, hours before the contest, his forearm flared up and he was unable to help the slugger go for his third home run derby title, possibly costing him everything. So, Mike Friedland, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And last, the New York Jets. Shocker. In a season where you're supposed to be competing for the Super Bowl and need zero distractions, you've decided to go on Hard Knocks, HBO's Hard Knocks.
Certainly a distraction.
Yeah. Because it was so successful the last few times they were on there. So the same goals, same old Jets. New York Jets, you are my legend superstars of the week. What do you got, Z?
All great choices. All great choices. I'm going to start with Brian Cashman. You fired hitting coach Dylan Lawson after another lackluster performance by the Yankee bats. You brought in Sean Casey, who has no coaching experience, except he was a former teammate with Aaron Boone. So you know, this is the first time in 26 years that Brian Cashman has ever made a change in season. Well, there's a first time for everything. Right, Brian? And there's a panic in the air. This team is one of the worst teams money can buy. And that's on your watch. And realistically, I don't know how confident Yankee fans are in this guy making decisions moving forward. Particularly as you have a very critical trade deadline coming up in just a matter of weeks. And you have the unicorn that is Shohei Ohtani out over the horizon, which, by the way, Cashman already whiffed on. Brian Cashman, this could be the beginning of your end. Brian Cashman, you are my alleged superstar of the week. ESPN, you're back 2 weeks in a row. My God, that home run derby coverage was awful. It was brutal. The split screen that you could not follow, the video game graphics that were just ridiculous, the launch angle, the miles per hour, the exit velo, it's completely unnecessary. Then you have Carl Ravich, like, giggling like a schoolboy under the play-by-play, right? Especially when J-Rod and Pete Alonso were up. He was just giddy. It was amazing how giddy Ravi was at the moment. And then the chef's kiss, the cherry on top, the pièce de résistance. When Vlad Jr. beats Randy Arozarena, they put the graphic up that he was the second Cuban player to ever win the home run derby.
What?
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is from Montreal, and his dad was Dominican. Whoops. It's a minor detail, really. ESPN, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And last but not least, Bob Huggins. This story is getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Now, coach, the disgraced West Virginia basketball coach, is claiming that he didn't resign, even though they have a statement saying that he resigned. There's a question about the validity of the email with which it was sent. And there's also questions of whether or not this was just cause. So there's plenty of investigation going on right now, and this is just eroding whatever grace Coach Huggins left with. Coach, do yourself a favor. Go out on a high note, and it wasn't that high of a note. Go out, your tail between your legs and your head held high. Just leave while you still can before you further tarnish what's left of your legacy. Bob Huggins, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we've said our piece. Go to our Twitter account at FadeRouteENZ and vote. And vote, and vote, and vote. And for our nominees.
Just do better, boys. Just do better.
Brownies? Of course you love brownies. But you know what's better than a brownie? A delicious, handcrafted, gourmet brownie delivered right to your doorstep. That's what our guys at Sweet Life Brownie Co. offer. Chef Tommy D and the crew offer a dozen delicious delights that you will crave, from the classic OB to Dutch Apple to Campfire S'mores and many more. Check out their website, sweetlifebrownieco.com, for their Friday brownie drops. At noon, their site goes live and you see what they're making. Since you're there, become a site member and earn points. You earn 50 points just by signing up. Make sure you follow them on Instagram and Facebook too, at sweetlifebrownie_co, for the latest updates and their latest releases and creations. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com. Give them a call, 845-641-3043, and tell them D&Z sent you. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com, 845-641-3043. Sweet Life Brownie Co., because there's always room for a brownie.
Order up!
It is time. We made it. It's time for us to wrap up our position by position breakdown of the top five relief pitchers in Major League Baseball. It's time for us to order up.
Order up, order up.
Now, that's not just closers. It's middle relievers. It's closers. It's who's the best of the best. From 5 to 1, who you got?
All right. So, I am going to start with a guy I like to make fun of, Kenley Jansen. I make fun of him because I love him. No, he's good, man. If you need to close games, he gets the job done. 19 saves, 3.23 ERA. That's pretty good. Number four, surprise you, Tyler Rogers. Second in the league with 20 holds, sporting a 2.17 ERA. Best reliever on my fantasy team. This is my number three guy. I got Tanner Scott. How about 64 strikeouts in 43 innings? Does that interest you at all? Number two, I've got Hector Neris. Number five in the league in holds with 17 and sporting a 1.43 ERA. And my number one will probably surprise you. It's Emmanuel Chase, whatever his name is.
Classe.
I'm just loving the season he's having for a terrible Indians team. 25 saves. I believe that's second in the league. 3.38 ERA and a 1.15 whip. That is my top guy. Who you got?
Great choices. Many and varied. For my honorable mention, because I do have an honorable mention, I do like the combination of Yennier Cano and Felix Bautista from the Baltimore Orioles.
Isn't Bautista the guy who lost the game last night for the American League?
In a game that doesn't matter. tell me again, what were his spring training numbers? Who gives a shit? 4-1 on the year, 107 ERA, 23 saves, 84 strikeouts, and 42 innings pitched, and a 0.93 whip. I'll take that. And his buddy Cano, not as many strikeouts, 38 strikeouts in 42 and two-thirds innings, but a 1.48 ERA and a 0.89 whip. That's damn good. That's damn good. A guy, for number five, a guy that really doesn't get his just due, and maybe that's because he's just, you know, a lefty out of the bullpen, but Tim Mesa of the Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah.
Reliable guy. He's a reliable guy. 32 strikeouts in 30 and two-thirds innings. A 1.08 ERA. 1.08 whip. A 1.17 ERA. So, very, very impressive. And, you know, 1-1 on the year, but his job is not to win. His job is to hold. His job is to keep the lead. And that's exactly what he does. Number four. Not Edwin Diaz, although certainly Edwin Diaz probably would have made this list. He certainly would have made this list this year, but his brother's there, Alexis Diaz, 3-1, 2.03 ERA, 61 strikeouts in 40 innings pitched, 26 saves, and a 1.03 whip for the first place Cincinnati Reds. A damn fine closer and a damn fine reliever. Number three, David Bednar of the Pittsburgh Pirates. 35 and a third innings pitched, 42 strikeouts, 0.96 whip, 1.27 ERA, 3-1 on the year, 17 saves. And a heck of a class act, gifting Clayton Kershaw a six-pack of Pittsburgh's finest when Kershaw bowed out, allowing Bednar to get on the All-Star team. Number two, Devin Williams of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Oh, like, really?
He's reinvigorated the airbender, man. He's reinvented the changeup. It's amazing. 1.05 whip, 45 strikeouts and 33 in the third innings, 20 saves, 1.89 ERA, 4-2 on the year. I'd say that's pretty solid. He's definitely, you know, he's having a bounce back year, and he is anchoring that team. And number one, all reliable, Josh Hader, 1.08 ERA.
Can't believe my 30, ears.
33 in the third innings, 50 strikeouts, 1.02 whip, 21 saves. Josh Hader continues to be a stud in the bigs. And to be the man, you have to beat the man. And he is continually the man. Now, will Williams eventually take that crown? Sure. Could Diaz do it? Absolutely. Can Cano or Bautista do it? It's possible. Relief pitching is a year-by-year basis, but Josh Hader has been consistent, and Josh Hader has, you know, he's definitely left. He's doing his job out in San Diego. He's left his imprint this season.
This has been the Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Anchor, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So until next time, stay faded, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route, but we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you like what you heard and want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Rate us 5 stars, leave us a review, turn on subscription notifications, and tell your friends. Spread the word, spread it wide.